And that's right, we're back again for another episode of Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. We are still in season two, and we're in a new category. We've already had one such battle, and that is Worst Marvel Movies. We are in round one. Let's take a look at the bracket. Last time we were with you, we had Madam Web versus X-Men Dark Phoenix. I didn't really give a shite which one of these films won, so I kind of left it up to Eric. And
then, you're not doing your job, and people expect more from you than that.
I hate them both equally.
You're supposed to hate them. That is the entire reason that we're doing this.
I do. So I couldn't really choose which one I hated more, so I kind of just deferred to you on that one. I don't know how tonight will go, because I like one of these more than I do the other, and we'll get into
what? That.
I do. Okay. So we'll get into that, but this is where our bracket stands right now, and tonight we are going to have the number three seed versus the number six seed, and that is Howard the Duck versus It's Morbin Time, Morbius the Living Vampire with Jared Leto. So we're going to talk about these two tonight, but before we do, just want to say welcome to everybody to the Box Office Battle Show with Greg and Eric. Glad you could be with us, whether you're watching us on the live stream on YouTube, or you're watching us on a replay on YouTube, or whether you're watching us on Facebook Live or Twitch. Thank you for joining us each and every week. We want to hear from you, so please email at boxofficebattles@gmail.com if you have any suggestions for the show, like a future category we do. What we do on this show is pretty simple. Like you saw in the bracket, we take movies of a similar genre and we pit them head to head against each other until there is a winner, or in this case, with worst movies, a loser, and then we declare them, and then we move on with our lives, having discussed and debated the virtues of all these films. You can also reach out to us and catch our live streams on Twitch at Box Office Battle Pod, and at YouTube at Box Office Battle Podcast, and we're on all podcast providers such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and so
many.
Grindr, yes. Farmersonly.com.
Chocolate Farmers.
Yeah.
Chocolate exactly. Singles.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're just looking to hook up with somebody.
Yeah.
It's whatever.
That's what we do. In a secondary route is that other than debating movies, we are a dating service. We figured that we weren't doing enough. We weren't doing enough just debating films, and we needed to offer something else to the community, so we chose that.
Yeah, so if you're looking for somebody and you think we can help, just email us and we'll put it out there to our giant Indonesian following, and we'll see. where do these people keep emailing you from?
We do have, if you look at, when I look at our numbers on our podcast provider, we have one site that we do that I post the podcast to, and it goes out to all the platforms. So there I can check our analytics. And we have a lot of people from China that I think spy on the show or listen to the show or trying to steal our identity, waiting maybe for us to give our passwords out over the air.
Maybe Box Office Battles, when you like loosely translate it into Chinese, like Mandarin or Cantonese or something, maybe it means like, you know, giant dudes fucking each other with Greg and Eric.
And yeah. And they can't get that on their home internet, so they have to use like a VPN to be able to stream our show and hear all the great man-on-man action that we have here.
All the heavy breathing and the crying and just all the, I wish we didn't have to do this for internet likes and I'm
trying
whatever.
To work my way through college.
It's listen, just, we've all been there. I have never stripped. I don't know if you know that about me. I was never a stripper.
Never. Did you ever consider it?
Yes, but what I considered was, what if I'm so good at it that this is now all I'm able to?
You're just going to get pigeonholed into stripping.
Exactly. Like, you know, what was that guy who played Kramer? Michael Richards.
Yes.
You know, he never really did much of it because people knew him as Kramer, or they knew him as the person who lost his mind and started using the N-word a bunch stage.
I think that killed his career more than the pigeonhole
into Kramer. Reasons.
But
listen, we're about to get into a career killer guy in one of these movies that we watched.
For sure.
when I saw him, I thought, I think there's something about that guy and like some weird stuff. And then I, sure enough, but we'll get into that later.
Well,
you know who I'm talking about.
I thought you were talking about Jared Leto, but now I think I do know.
He's problematic, but
I know who you're talking about.
The only thing more problematic than Jared Leto as a person is Jared Leto as an actor.
You know, and it's crazy because we're going to get into Morbius. It's going to be the first movies we talk about tonight. But it's crazy because, like, when he first started acting, well, let's go back to 30 Seconds to Mars. I mean, people loved that band in the early 2000s, and you know, from Yesterday and The Kill. They were very popular, and then he branched out into acting, and right away he found immediate success. You know,
I thought he was like a child actor or something, wasn't he?
Well, he might have been. I just know what the band with 30 Seconds to Mars. That's all I know about Jared Leto. I mean,
he was on My So-Called Life.
Oh, so, okay, like, yeah.
As a kid, and he was in Fight Club.
Right,
that was a small role.
But then Dallas Buyers Club, he was in that, and he was phenomenal in it.
Yeah, I think. Okay, yeah, so he was good in that. I remember liking that movie and all the performances in that. But maybe you've got a director who brings out the best in you. I can honestly tell you that unless I've heard it in passing and didn't know it was 30 Seconds to Mars, I've never listened to a single second of that band.
Oh, wow.
I doubt highly that it is something I would like.
It's
an email and tell me if I'm wrong.
I mean, I would describe it as My Chemical Romance light. It's a little.
So then I was right.
Yeah, it's a little emo-ish. You know, it can be hard, but it's not like our buddy Jarrett in Bowling for Soup with the nice, I mean, pop punk, heavy, nice riffs and ballads and stuff like that. It's more of a, you know, dark emo type music.
Well, I imagine that it would be considering the source of the music.
Yeah, I do you hear that?
What is that?
That's
an earthquake?
That is thunder, my friend. I am in the middle of a thunderstorm right now. It's great.
Okay, well, we had a pretty tough storm earlier today.
So I will say, if my power goes out, you will know why. Okay. It's been going on for, I was afraid that it might go out, cuz we usually do lose power when we get the thunderstorms, but yeah, it's pretty crazy right now. But yeah, Jared Leto won an Oscar for Dallas Buyers Club. So he's not like he's a horrible actor. It's just that after that, it's like, I don't know. I don't know about
he
the guy.
Started he's a kinda, cult. He started a cult? Or
Yeah.
There's a lot of money. You have more fun as a, like, follower. You make more money as the leader, I think.
I think that's how cults work. I've watched a lot of cult documentaries. I am fascinated by cult documentaries. I like to get tips so that I know how to start my own cult later on.
Yeah, one of these days. You probably don't have the dynamic personality that it takes to be
thanks so much
a charlatan or like one of those people. You know, like Jim Jones, you know, like 1970s, and he took a bunch of those people to like Guyana or something.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Jonestown?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
the Kool-Aid.
I had a joke about that whole situation, but the punchline was too long.
Oh, my God. Oh, too soon. Too soon. Yeah, I've watched those documentaries.
The audio of that is like super, super creepy and will stay with you forever. And I don't recommend listening to it because it will make you feel a way, especially I think if you have children, but I think even if you don't, like what you hear in those recordings is so shockingly and objectively awful. But I'm still going to make jokes about it. It's not so awful that I don't feel like I can't talk some shit. And by the way, Kool-Aid Incorporated, Big Kool-Aid, Big Sugar Drink, would like you to know that that was Flavor Aid that they
was
were using.
It was.
And they would really love it if we would stop.
It's never going to happen. They don't mind when people say you're drinking the Kool-Aid. They just don't like it when people refer to it as in the context of Jamestown.
But that is the context. That's why people say that.
Yeah, exactly. For those of you who don't realize, Jim Jones, a cult leader, moved his entire congregation to Guyana and created a community at Jamestown. And later when the federal government was going to move in, feeling pressure that his cult was crumbling, he had them commit mass suicide with cyanide, probably one of the most painful ways to die, mixed in with Flavor Aid, great Flavor Aid, or whatever, which they had massive boxes of. If you've ever seen the documentary, it's insane.
And then they kill like a sitting U.S. senator or congressman, way out.
Yeah, well, that's how things kind of fell apart. He came to visit the camp. It's just like something like you see in a film. The senator came. He was senator or House of Representatives, but he came to the camp to inspect it because they'd been having concerns raised about this cult, and they were given the whole 5-star treatment. Everybody was singing Kumbaya, and they had it. They had it down. They'd got one over. And then a few people started passing notes to his people, saying that we're being trapped. Help us, get us out of here. This is a nightmare. And then word rippled through the community. And it got back to the leadership of Jamestown that this had happened. So there was no way they could let that congressman leave. So they ended up, a bunch of his soldiers, just as they got to their private plane, just opened fire on the runway and just killed everybody. It's crazy. It's a crazy story if you've ever seen it. But yeah, probably one of the most notorious cults that I remember growing up, but there's been others since then. We had, David Koresh was a crazy one. So
look, I mean, that's not too far from here. You can,
in Waco,
down in Waco, about 2 hours from here.
So you said that Jared Leto had a cult. What cult did he have? I know that he's been accused of sexual assault by multiple people.
Well, okay. So if I were a better person, I'd have looked that up before I started accusing him of it.
I'm hot and cold on the guy, other than sexual assault.
Sure. It's the disappointment is the worst.
Yeah.
And the sexual assault.
Yeah.
It's not really anything. On
it's really the hypocrisy. That's a running gag here.
9 women accused him of sexual misconduct. He became a teetotaler in 2007. He gave money to Haitian orphans after an earthquake one time.
Well, that's not bad.
That's good.
See? So does that balance out the essays? Does that It's the hypocrisy.
He is a gay rights activist. So
there you go. Well, he was in Dallas Buyers Club. I think that would... where he played a gay man, so I think that would qualify, trying to get AIDS drugs. If you've never seen it, it's a good film.
I have seen it. I have seen it, and I very much liked it. Okay, well, there's nothing on here that says specifically that he's in a cult, but I thought there was something about these 9 women accusing him, and it was more like this, well, I guess sexual assault isn't voluntary. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But like, they were like all put together. I don't know. I don't want to get sued by Jared Leto because he happens upon
right
podcast.
I don't think we have to worry about that. So at least not right now.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Allegedly. Anyway,
all right. Well, so I mean, I guess we're getting into
Morbius.
Jared Leto is Dr. Gary.
Dr. Mike
Morbius.
Gary Morbius.
Gary Morbius.
Dr. Michael Morbius, is the title of the film we're getting ready to review. I did want to say one other thing about Jared Leto, too, is movie-wise, I'm hot and cold on the guy, because he did a documentary called Artifact that was exposing the problems within the music industry. Because I think I mentioned this on the show before when we had this coming up, where he when we were doing the music category, I mentioned this, where he was getting ready to do the 30 Seconds to Mars third album, and the studio, the music studio said, By the way, that's great, great. Before you guys start recording, you owe us a lot of money.
Yeah.
And the first two albums had done extremely well. And, well, it's all the advances, it's all the touring, it's all this. And so he started looking at what they were charging him and the band, and it was ridiculous what they were taking back out of their advances and everything that they had earned. And then when you compared it to what the album, the albums, the first two had actually earned, so he went into a very long court battle with his record company to self-produce and break the contract. And if you've never seen the documentary, it's called Artifact. I highly recommend it because it will change the way you think about the music. If you disliked the music industry before,
I was going to say, it's not going to change the way I think about
you
it.
You will loathe it. I mean, it goes into how little artists are actually paid and how they do have to scrounge. You know, the big artists, you know, can make millions of dollars, but the ones that are kind of in the middle get royally screwed by the music industry, who just want to capitalize on instant fame. And they predict that these artists are going to burn out, and then they just use them until they can dry them up and move on to the next commodity. And that's kind of what the documentary is about. It's fascinating. So, yeah, and he got out of it, and he self-produces now, and it's better for the band. But he does so many things. The thing with Jared Leto, and I think of this movie in particular, is there was the essays. People started to give him the Nickelback treatment where they started to get tired of him. He did the Joker thing for DC, and everybody hated it. I don't know how you think you can follow Heath Ledger's Joker. And he tried to do something different. I will commend him on that. But it was not what everybody wanted.
Somebody's got to do it, and you've got to have, like, I mean, what did you want to see? Like Jay Leno or somebody? Like,
this is the problem, is I didn't want to see the Joker, period, but the movie industry has this problem where, you know, Jack Nicholson did a great Joker. Heath Ledger, well, let's do Joker again. Why do we have to keep doing Joker over and over again? Heath Ledger kind of capped it. So can we have another? Batman has a massive amount of villains that he can fight. We don't have to have Heath Ledger come, you know, back from the dead, or put Jared Leto in there as the Joker. It was just too much. And I think it was the fans started really to turn on him. And then you followed up with this movie that hits, you know, and it just had all kinds of problems and reshoots. And people were starting to get superhero fatigue as it was. And a lot of people, we talked about this with Madam Web, knew that there were two types of Marvel movies out there. There was the MCU, which was Iron Man and Incredible Hulk and Thor and the Avengers. And then you had these cast-off MCUs that they had Spider-Man, but they were throwing all these subpar characters out there like Venom and Madame Web and Morbius. And people just, they knew better. The audience had figured this whole thing out, and they did not want to come to see this movie.
So before we get into what a piece of shit this movie is, do you want to give us a little, you know, 2 to 3 minute history of this character from the comic era? And was this ever a candidate for making a movie based on what you know of the comics, or would this have always been a bad choice?
I think that the last thing you said is the most correct answer, is it Morbius as a character should not have a standalone film. He is best used as an anti-hero, a guest starring in a Spider-Man story or in Blade, because that was his two kind of nemesis, if you will. But he's kind of one of these anti-heroes. In fact, I got a picture of the comic that he debuted in. In 1971, Morbius made his first appearance and fought Spider-Man in the Spider-Man comics. It was interesting about this was that in the early, like, 30s and 40s, vampire comics and horror comics were pretty popular. But then we had in the 50s, we had the crackdown of the code, the comics code, where they couldn't show vampires in comics anymore because it was evil.
Well, you got to take a stand on something.
Yeah. So in 1971, they lifted the embargo, the blockade. Yes.
In 1950, do we have anything else we could be worried about besides vampires? Like any problematic treatment of race?
Well, you know.
No, not really.
You got to start somewhere. Why not with the vampires?
Vampires. Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
So Morbius, the thing was it, when Marvel found out, hey, we can use vampires again, let's put them in a comic. And everybody said, well, let's put them in Spider-Man because that's our hottest one. And so that ended up where Morbius came around. And I actually have some here, as a matter of fact. This is a two-parter. I'll show my comics here.
Oh, you don't have this one?
No. That one's 1971. I don't have one that old. This is 1991. This is Morbius right there in Spider-Man number 14 in 1991, done by Todd McFarlane of Spawn fame. I just was looking for one that I might have had that Morbius was in it. But I always liked the character of Morbius, but he was always a guy that popped up in Spider-Man as like this troubled vampire. And the movie does get his origin a little bit correct. He's a doctor that is riddled with a blood disease, and he's searching for a cure, and he accidentally turns himself into a vampire by looking for a cure and trying to use the genetics of bats to solve that. They get that right in the film. It's just, again, he's just not a character that's meant for that type of platform. He should have been a guest in any other film.
It seemed about as shallow as a, like, Eastern Tennessee gene pool. I just hopefully your metrics don't show us performing very well in Eastern Tennessee.
We probably aren't. Not anymore.
Shit. But yes, I mean, so throughout the entire movie, that was a big part of it. And I'm just like, well, where's the depth? Because I get that you're sick. I get that you've got a buddy who's also sick. And I get that you both turned into this thing. And I just kept saying to myself, I paused the movie when I finally saw that him and his childhood friend were now going to be in conflict with one another.
Yeah.
And that was 1 hour and 2 minutes into this movie. They took what a lot of films do in about 20 minutes,
right?
Setting up who these people are, why are they the way they are, what is their, you know, pain point, what's the value proposition. Sorry, I'm talking B2B sales now. But like, it took for fucking ever, and it didn't take forever because they were digging so far into the complex nature of this character or this setting or these people or anything. It was just too fucking long.
Yeah.
And you know what that left was? 44 minutes to wrap it all up.
Right.
It was the oddest paced movie I think I've ever seen. And I just kept thinking to myself, come on already. Like I can't remember this movie.
Yeah.
Where he, I don't know. Something happened in about 2 minutes that I just sat there and thought, well, why'd that even have to be part of it? Like, you, right. I know it's just 2 minutes. You just added 2 minutes to what was already an hour. Now it's 1 hour and 2 minutes. And like, man, yeah, between the pacing of this piece of shit and the no depth of any character.
Right.
Name one character in this movie that had any, I mean, honestly, Lucian, his friend,
yeah,
probably had the most.
I said that when I watched it, I said that to the wife. I said that at least Matt Smith is trying. Matt Smith is one of these characters. He's got, like, to me, he's got an odd face, is, you know, the sunken eyes, kind of a long face. But, man, the guy can act. I've seen him in movies that are complete, should be complete turds. Like, he was in Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. And without him, I mean, as the comedy relief, it doesn't really work. But, and that's the one thing I think in Morbius that I do enjoy, is the few times that Matt Smith is actually on the screen. But like you said, it's the exposition. I've been making my wife watch the films that we're going to cover. I like to get her opinion on it, but I also, when we're doing bad movies, I like to make her suffer as well as I have to suffer, because I did not want to watch these this past weekend. I wanted to enjoy myself. I played golf on Friday, and I was like, oh, I got to watch these pieces of shit. So we watched one on Saturday, one on Sunday, and I was not looking forward to it. And so we put this on.
It feels a little unfair because you volunteer to do this show, and you're the one who chooses the topics.
Yes.
So but it doesn't seem fair to put her through it. You know, she didn't have anything to do with it. She's innocent.
Yeah.
Bystander. I mean, besides marrying you,
we,
someone, you know, who's hateful and vindictive and makes her want to makes her watch shitty movies with you.
It's in the vows. It's for better movies or for worse movies. And we have to do for worse movies right now. So she doesn't mind. And it's funny. She watched this and she was on her phone for most of it. And so she would throw out these snarky comments. And when it was revealed that, you know, that Matt Smith was actually taking the serum and he's a bad vampire, she was like, oh, surprise, surprise. It was like, you knew that at the very beginning of the film, that this was always going to be the nemesis, because it's cliche. That's why we have cliches. These things are done to death. And so it takes an hour to get to something you already know was going to happen, when you could have done it in an email. It would have been so much quicker, and it would have saved everybody a lot of time.
I wish Lucian would have sent, I wish they would have had a scene like 14 minutes in where, like, Dr. Gregory Morbius is looking at his email looking for a coupon code or something, and then just an email pops up from Lucian and says, by the way, I turned into an evil vampire, and therefore you and I will now be mortal enemies.
Exactly.
And we will have to battle to the death. And the only way to kill a vampire is with garlic or
stake through the heart.
Stake through the heart, silver or bullet. The sun.
Sun, silver bullet, silver, I think.
Bullet. I think a cross.
Works. Cross. Can burn them. I don't know if it kills them, but they don't like it.
Oh, okay.
But
there's rules to this.
There's rules. There's rules.
And if he would have just sent an email, I would have appreciated it so much more.
If you'd have sent him an email of the picture of the sun and ended the whole movie right there, he opens it up, sunrise.
Actually, I would have liked it more if he had sent an email like 3 days before, but then when Dr. Jeff Morbius checks it, it's another email that says, just bubbling this up to the top of your inbox.
Well, see, so that's the thing.
Per my last email, I'm your enemy.
Just so you know. But that's the thing that this movie does, is it tries to be an origin story. So it's got the whole where he's doing the experiment on the boat, and then he has to go through all the metamorphoses and changes. And so they're putting Lucian or Milo, which is just the whole Milo thing, whatever. They put it on the back burner, and when it becomes necessary, then we bring him back so that he can get a hold of the serum. They could have just gone full cliche and had them work on it together, and then Lucian steal the formula or some bullshit like that, because that's been done in movies. I told the wife, I said, this film to me is like these bad Marvel movies, and we'll see others in these brackets. And Madame Web, I know you like Madame Web a little bit, is a little bit like this, as well as Dark Phoenix. It's like a Mad Lib. It's like they write these scripts with like a Mad Lib where you just fill in the blank. So it's like, all right, enter past trauma. Enter childhood friend. And just write the character out. Enter, you know, nemesis origin story. Enter hero origin story. And it's just the same shit. And that's why so many people get just fed up with it. And then you get this movie. One of the things that is, it's insulting to the intelligence, is the script writing is so basic and unintelligent. Like this scene here where Lucian, aka Milo, just collapses because of a faulty pump in his blood system, and like Morbius takes a spring from a pen and just puts it in the slot and magically fixes the blood pump machine, and then the doctor raves about it. How brilliant that is. No
brilliant engineering mind.
Yeah. It makes no sense.
They send him to a special school because of that. Because, like, it was like an aptitude test for... Because
he took a spring out of a pet.
Weird vampire kids. And like, you know, those kids are going to be weird anyway. Like, growing up in a weird, like, hospital like that.
So let's talk about that. The kids outside that beat the crippled kid's ass.
I mean, every bully I ever knew would see a crippled kid and be like, well, we can't do that.
I know. These are the worst bullies in the history of bullies. I can't get over that scene where he comes out there on his crutches and they got his love letter from Morbius and they just beat the hell out of him. Granted, he hits him
to let it go. Then you got to let it go.
It just sucked out the window.
In the courtyard of wherever they are, Santorini or wherever it was.
Greece or say, I don't know. Yeah.
And I mean.
Yeah.
They're already going to be weird because they're all in this hospital together, you know, jerking off on pieces of toast to see who's going to have to like eat it or shit like that. That's just what happened. You know, like that many like horny hormonal kids all in one little thing. And they always come up with like the weirdest fucking shit to do because they're,
I've never lived like, in that type of environment. Trying
to figure it out.
They
were already going to be weird. And then you send them off to some school for weird, smart kids, and that's going to make them more weird. And he was weird. Everything was just weird.
Yeah. He is. I mean, he's got this. He's already looks like he's dead when they fast forward, and he's. And I just love this accelerated, like he's just a super genius. And Claude Debussy says, are you speaking from experience, Eric?
I have an answer to that, if you'd like to know. Here's the deal. When you stand around in a circle with a group of dudes and you have one piece of bread, it's the last person who comes on it that has to eat it. Well, guess what? I'm a premature ejaculator, so I never had to eat the toast. I was the first one finished. I only barely got my pants down before I was, oh God, uh-oh, and like covering myself up.
Okay.
went recently to a premature ejaculators support group, and I didn't know what to wear, so I just came in my pants.
Very good.
Actually, it was scheduled for 8 o'clock, but everybody came early.
Okay. See what you've done? We're talking about Morbius, ladies and gentlemen.
Morbius, the vampire. Jerking off on toast vampire.
Yeah. But the thing is with this, is like, it is one of these movies that you could tell the screenwriters have no knowledge of basic science, because when they... like present him this award, the guy goes, he's cured more people than penicillin. And it's like, that's your speech? That's your speech? He's done all these things with his artificial blood that we don't know how actually works, but we know it's blue.
Well, Dr. Martine called it the Nobel Prize. I just went, are we even trying nobody on set? I mean, listen.
It was weird.
This is a big production.
Yeah.
A big shitty production, but it was a big production. There's not one person, one art department guy who kind of like looked up and went, Nobel Prize?
Yeah.
Nobel. They go, oh, yeah. We'll reshoot that. No, they just left it in there.
That's
also, I thought that was Halle Berry for a long time.
Oh, the love interest?
Yeah.
Well, they keep
look
her
a lot like her.
They keep her in shadows quite a bit too. The whole movie is very shadow oriented, but here, this is not a scene from Dallas Buyers Club, even though it could be. This is from Morbius, where he's getting his blood treatment. But I'm just saying, it's Jared Leto. I think he really thought this was going to be successful. He puts a lot of overacting into this. I read that he was so wrapped up in this movie that he pissed off the crew because he refused to walk normally anywhere, that he had to walk around actually with the cane, and it would take him 45 minutes to get from the lunch area back to the set. And so it got so bad because he's a method actor that they had to actually get him a wheelchair and wheel him around the set so that they could just get the scenes done faster. So like, and he loses the weight. He put a lot into this for something that I don't know if he read the script. When I was reading about this film, I saw quotes where he was talking about how this was going to be like Wolverine and Spider-Man, and they were going to do six of them. And I'm like, dude.
I don't think that this is a man who has the ability to look at themselves like with intellectual honesty and say, maybe something I did isn't great. I get the sense that he's the kind of person who thinks everything he ever did was great.
That's a good point.
The last shit he took was the greatest shit
of
all humanity. You know, like he certainly comes across that way. And so, it doesn't surprise me that he thought it was going to be rad, but you're right. But how can somebody overact so much and put in such an underwhelming character?
He's just unmemorable. He's just not interesting. It's one of those things like you go to watch a superhero film and you want that character to be even this type of character. So let's take another vampire. Let's take Blade, for instance. Blade is a living vampire, and in the Marvel universe that Wesley Snipes plays completely badass. He's got this chemistry about him that exudes just this type of character that is not afraid of anything, but he's likable. I mean, he gets these one little quips in, but he just plays it to the hilt where he's got a lot more charisma. He's more interesting. He's brooding, but he's not to the point where you dislike him. And Morbius is the exact opposite of these things. It is like the whiniest of whiny kids that got picked on in school becomes a vampire, and he doesn't know what to do with himself. So he plays it like this, just even when he becomes a vampire, he never exudes strength to me. Mm-hmm. He never exudes heroism. You don't ever, and in the comics, Morbius tries to do good. He just has this affliction where he's trying to survive, similar to Blade. And he tries to take out evil doers. But you don't get none of that in this movie. You know, you talked about the 1 hour before we even find out that Matt Smith, that Lucian is the bad guy, but it's also that there's only like two fight scenes the whole rest of the way. And it's just with Lucian, the one in the subway and then the one through the buildings and whatever in the finale. That's all we get. And my wife was like, wow. So you do all of that and then you have two fights and then all of a sudden it's just over.
It was over so fast, like me coming on a piece of toast. The budget for this film, Greg, was $85 million. If you replaced Jared Leto with Nicolas Cage,
he'd work for half.
You could show me this movie and that could be the only difference in the movie. Literally every other part of it could be the same. Mm-hmm. And I would be convinced that this was a $10 million budget Nick Cage film that he's doing to pay off some sort of IRS debt. Well, it's just so, everything's just so boring. Every set that they created was boring. Everything was so boring. It, like you have on the screen here,
the bats.
I understand that it's like in a lab, so it's going to be like clinical and sterile and feel like that. And I'm sure that the fluorescent lighting, which is always meant to make it seem eerie and cold and impersonal, and I get all that, but nothing about the way they set it up. So they didn't give us characters with any depth. No. They didn't give us settings with any depth. They didn't give us a plot with any depth. And I mean, just paper thin, just as shallow as a pothole, you know. And I, again, just kept thinking to myself, when is something going to happen? And like you said, when it does, it's over fast. Yeah. There's two of them and it's over real quick.
And they're
this
in
movie
they're,
sucks.
They're like even not even really dramatic scenes. The scene in the subway, which oddly enough, you know, I lived in England for a total of like 9-10 years. And we spent a lot of time on the London Underground and the tubes. And so this scene comes up and I immediately go, well, this is in London. And then I started to look at the cityscape and everything that they were around. And the whole thing was filmed in England. So it's supposed to be New York City, but it's filmed in England. And it was that put me off. And then I started to realize, look at all the extras. And British people look a certain way. And I'm like, these are all Brits. This is not New York City. And it just takes you right out of the film. It just feels odd. But this scene, the subway fight scene, Morbius gets his ass kicked and he has to learn how to fly, if you will, for a few brief moments. And that's it. That's mm-hmm. it. That's the whole fight scene. It's like it's a non-fight scene, if you will. It's a moment of brief tension that goes absolutely nowhere. And then what happens next? Nothing.
I thought they were about to kiss, honestly.
I don't know. I know that the movie went through reshoots. I think that they just didn't know really what to do with it. To me, it was just like when I talked about Madam Web. It is the Sony Pictures having to do these Spider-Man films in order to keep the rights to Spider-Man, and they really wanted to build these characters up so they could have their own version of the MCU. So they had the Venom going, they had Morbius introduced, and then you get at the end of this film, you get Michael Keaton, who comes out of nowhere and plays his character from the Spider-Man films in Adrian Toomes, which is the Vulture. And so it's like, why are we putting this guy in? The only reason you're doing it is so that you can sell tickets to the next one, because he has no business being in this film. It makes absolutely no sense other than this is the whole goal of the film, is to try to sell tickets for the next one.
I honestly thought, because I was, you know, not completely engaged with this movie the whole time, I thought maybe I had missed the credits and a new movie had started or something. Because I just look up and, yeah, there's this weird bird guy. But then I saw Jared Leto, Dr. Gorgson, Morbius or whatever. I have bad news for everybody. The same people who wrote the screenplay for Morbius,
yeah,
wrote the screenplay for Madam Web.
Mm-hmm.
And what I can't figure out is how the same two guys who wrote a masterpiece like Madam Web could turn around. Well, they didn't turn around. Okay, they must have learned a lot, because Morbius came out in 2022. This movie fucking sucks, and it's terrible in every way. And if you take out the parts that suck, there's nothing left.
No.
But they learned a lot in the 2 years. Later, Madam Web came out in 2024.
Yeah.
And like, clearly they had got their shit together. They went to like a remedial writing program at the local community college and really put in the time and effort to work on their craft. I think it was successful.
Yeah. Madam Web was not successful, unfortunately. And these guys really are just the type of studio writers that the studio wants. The studio says, give us a script that we can film now. It doesn't have to be good. It just needs to be serviceable so we can get the character out there. People will come see no matter what slop we put in front of them. give us the slop and we'll get the people in seats. And people, you know, kind of, they were done with this film. You know, the thing is, even, and I saw, I was like, one of the things that really like annoyed me about the film was the overuse of the CGI stuff with Morbius and Lucian, Milo. It was like, God, it looks like watching two cartoon characters fight. It's so rubbery and there's no depth to the colors. The fight scenes you can't really see because they're intertwined and they're twisting around. The fights are nowhere near the level that they need to be in a superhero film to achieve some sort of entertainment. And they have no entertainment value whatsoever. And I said
that I was not entertained.
One of the things that would have been partially entertaining was if they had used practical effects and had prosthetics on Jared Leto and Matt Smith. Maybe a little bit would more believable, like a really scary vampire costume, not cartoons. But I read that Jared Leto, they wanted to go that route. And Jared Leto said, no, let's do CGI. It's the wave of the future. I mean, somebody that's so out of touch with what people want.
We don't know what it is or how to do it.
Yeah, let's just do it. It's like, dude, nobody wants that. Nobody wants an overuse of CGI in films. It's like watching the old movies with claymation in them. Yeah, they're fun to look back as an old history, but I don't want to see that now.
Hey, Davey.
I'm not talking about Davy and Goliath or Gumby. I'm talking about like the Ray Harryhausen. Like, I like the old stuff like Sinbad, Eye of the Tiger and Journey to the Center of the Earth, but I don't want to see that today.
California Raisins.
That's stop motion. Well, that is the same thing. Same thing. Stop motion claymation. It is. You're right. You know, the thing is, this movie sucks without a doubt. My favorite part of the film were the memes that came out afterwards. Everybody knows that it was supposed to come out in July of 2020, but they had to push it off because of COVID. And that just allowed the buzz, the negative buzz to generate. And people started seeing the trailers and you knew it was a piece of shit when you saw the trailer. So when it came out, the internet, it can be a cruel place, but it can also be a beautiful place. And it's one of those things where they just jumped all in with making fun of this film. And so they started like putting memes out where I loved it when Morbius said it's Morbin time. Do you remember when he jumped into the river and saw Spider-Man and punched him in the face and said, I just morbed you, bitch. You know, things like that people were putting all over the internet. And it was just funny, and it kept getting like a mind of its own where all these people were, you know, building this buzz about this movie that nobody had seen, and people were lying about the film, saying it was really good. Do you know it has the only distinction of a movie that has been bombed twice, a double bombed, because it was released and then they ended up re-releasing it again. I actually have the article. I love this from the Time. The Morbius double box office bomb may be the year's funniest story.
What did they think was going to be different the second time?
Well, the thing was that people, you know, it only made $75 million its first run at the box office. But the internet, all these people who were doing these memes were like, no, don't pull it from the theaters. We love Morbius. Morbius is so good. I love this picture here. It says, be careful out there, everyone. I had two Morbius tickets in my car and someone broke in and left four more. So it's good stuff. So people were like, yeah, no, it's the greatest movie ever. And they just kept inundating. And then we had the writer's strike. So there was not a lot of stuff for the studios to release. So somebody went, you know what? We really need to re-release this because I think it's found its audience now on the internet. They really totally bought into the sarcasm. They couldn't read the room.
It was their first day on the internet or what?
Exactly. It's so hilarious what they did. That I survived this one here. I survived the stampede to get into Morbius. But yeah, so they ended up, you know, putting this out there. And so they decided to re-release Morbius. And the second time they released it, made 300,000 in 3 days. That was it. And then they realized they've been had, and they pulled it from the theaters. It was crazy. The double bomb. I think that's the only movie that double bombed in the same year. It's insane.
Box office so worldwide is almost 170 million.
Yeah, what does everybody outside of the U.S. know? What do they know?
Especially about vampires. Well, I think Transylvania might have something to say about it.
The thing is I think this was the start of where people start, because that for a Marvel movie is really low. And it was one of those things where everybody saw every Marvel movie. If it had the name Marvel on it, people were going to see it. And I think when this happened, people started to go, oh, Marvel movies can be shit, these new ones. So I think that's what is. That has hurt the future releases by Sony and some of the ones by the MCU. I think it's hurt their box office. I think, Madam Web, people didn't fall for it, and they made fun of it. I know that you love it, but it got made fun of, and people hate it.
Diamond in the Rough.
Diamond in the Rough. Craven, which was just recently released and on our bracket, is the same thing. And when we watch Craven, I want you to think back on Morbius and realize it's the same movie. It's just recolored.
Same character?
No, it's Craven the Hunter, but it's the same shit. It's looking into the past and having the trauma and becoming a superhero who's a bad guy but a good guy, and dealing with all this stuff and this dealing with the origin story. It's just the same shit, and it doesn't fly with anybody anymore.
I don't need the internal conflict of good versus evil. When I watch a superhero movie, I want to see a good superhero battle against an evil superhero. Exactly. I don't really give a fuck about, I mean, it's okay if you want to come up with a backstory that's like complicated and gets them to why they're good or why they're bad, but don't give me like a fully formed superhero who still struggles with all of this, because I'm not showing up to watch like Good Will Hunting, you know, where we've got characters with really complex emotions and I have a really hard time figuring out what they're supposed to be and how they're supposed to become it and what they're supposed like, show me Hulk throwing a Captain Cape around, you know, slamming him into the ground. Show me Thor hitting people with a hammer. Show me, you know, Wolverine using his little feline
his little claws,
playing with a ball of yarn, you know, something.
I agree.
But don't give me this garbage with whatever this was. I mean, this sucked so fucking hard.
Yeah.
There was honestly a time, Greg, where I thought to myself, would I rather watch Battlefield Earth again than this? Now the answer's no. Yeah. Maybe, but at least with Battlefield Earth, I could laugh so hard at just some of the absurdity.
Yes.
All of the absurdity of it. You can't laugh at the absurdity of this because it takes itself so seriously. And Jared Leto takes himself so seriously. And everybody's just real, you know, like they're making
Dallas Buyers Club 2.
Casablanca 2. Yeah, something crazy.
It takes itself way too seriously. And that's why it's so easy to make fun of. And I think that's where it lets itself down. Like you said, Good Will Hunting is written by two people, granted, you know, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, but it's written by somebody who actually had a good story, good dialogue, good plot pacing. But superhero movies aren't that. But you get people who aren't capable of writing that, trying to write that kind of drama, and what they end up doing is over exposition, where instead of showing, they tell you, I'm so confused, my trauma is so bad, you know. And it's like, no, you need to dial that back a bit. If you want to have a troubled character, you don't need to tell us they're troubled, like this movie continues to insist upon itself. You just let it be. It's like the scene where I thought about it. It was where Matt Smith is yelling at Morbius about how he doesn't want to give up being a vampire. And he has to do this speech about how I've been taken advantage of my whole life and now it's my turn. And it's like, you don't need to say that. I already knew why he was doing this. You didn't need to tell me why he was doing it. It just wastes time.
It was something earlier where they talk about bats and echolocation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, one of the jackasses has to just come in and say, it's where they use sound. And I'm like,
I know. Thank you,
Captain Dictionary. Shut the fuck up. Like, we all know what echolocation is. Yeah. And if you don't, there's enough context clues to figure it out. Yeah. But don't, how could someone take themselves seriously as a script writer and be like, I have the power of echolocation. Police cop number two. Hey, isn't that the thing where bats use sound and it bounces off and then they're able to navigate? Then Dr. Morbius. Yeah, that's it. Like, I mean, I just wrote something better than what was in the movie. And that was
without a doubt. Yes, it is the over exposition of things that we don't need to know. And this, again, the powers, there's nothing really new that they do here. It was they created Man-Bat instead of Batman. They're trying to create a Batman-like hero. So they're diving full force into the bat thing. And it just never gets off the ground. See what I did there?
Shouldn't he have been sleeping all day and doing all this shit at night?
Hanging
anyway?
Upside down in a closet somewhere.
Yeah,
at least look. At least Catwoman slept on a bookshelf and drank from.
She did, and then knocked like a cigarette lighter off, and then knocked a little cup off.
That's funny. So I would watch Catwoman again before I watch this. I will never watch this again. It's done.
No.
I'm done with it.
Yeah, I'm out. I'm out on Morbius.
All right.
So that's two thumbs down for me.
Let's look at Morbius's opponent and see what we think about it, shall we? Tonight, Morbius is facing Howard the Duck from 1986. Another Marvel comic that's out there. I have a picture of the original Marvel comic. This is, I think, issue number one. I think also in the early 70s, I want to say 72, 73, if I'm not mistaken, was when Howard the Duck came along. He looks a little bit like Donald Duck. They actually had to change his appearance after Disney sued them and said, that looks a little bit too much like Donald. And then he started wearing pants. And that's how they got out of the lawsuit. All right, it doesn't look like Donald Duck anymore because our duck now wears pants.
And so, smokes cigars.
Yeah, and smokes cigars. The thing about it is I was never a huge Howard the Duck fan as a comic fan. I was aware of him growing up because he would pop up in comics as a joke. But I can appreciate what Howard the Duck was in the 70s. And this movie isn't really it. In the 70s, Howard the Duck was used as a kind of a symbol for anti-establishment. It was a heavy dose of sarcasm, a heavy dose of metaphor. In storytelling, it was one of the first comedy type comics where they didn't take themselves too seriously. He fights a vampiric cow in like the first three issues. All the rogues villains were silly. So if you remember when The Tick was popular in the 90s, the cartoon?
I do not.
You don't remember The Tick? All right, well, then you're missing out. It's really funny. In the 90s, there was a cartoon called The Tick, and they had so many different characters that were hilarious. One of the villains is called Chairface Chippendale. It's just a guy with a big chair on his head. He's Chairface. That's it. They have one called Deflator Mouse, who is a guy in a mouse costume, but it's Deflator Mouse like the opera. It's that kind of humor. And that's what Howard the Duck was. It was this kind of pseudo intellectual humor disguised as a duck fighting crime.
I think what really ruffled my feathers about this movie
yes,
is that it didn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
All.
It doesn't.
From beginning to I would say end, but maybe to the part where I just kind of allowed myself the freedom to not be totally invested in it because life's too short.
Yeah.
From beginning to whenever that point was. And it was post a bestiality, almost sex scene.
Yeah.
Okay, listen.
Let's dive right into that scene.
What I don't think Leah Thompson knew at the time, maybe she still doesn't, is that ducks have penises that are shaped like a corkscrew. And they do this because ducks, like dolphins, are prone to not seeking consent from sexual partners when it comes to reproduction.
Well, then they should have cast Jared Leto.
And and so the corkscrew penis is a way to get it in there, and then when the female duck tries to disengage, it's way more difficult. And if you've ever seen the mating rituals of ducks, it looks like a murder is happening. And
I've never wanted to, but you know, I'll take your word.
I don't think she knew that. And maybe that's why he started to have second thoughts about halfway through, because he starts going, well, no, I was kidding, and maybe we shouldn't do this. And
right.
I'm, you know, whatever. But he was probably like, you don't want none of this corkscrew dick.
And Tim Robbins not shown up and killed the vibe, I think that, I don't know what would have happened. But maybe because he's from Duck World, that he doesn't, he has regular, more humanoid dick. I don't know. I don't know.
He fucking said, okay, like, I'll tell you when it happened for me. And it was, no, he didn't say, but 13 minutes into this movie, he said, I know quack foo instead of kung fu.
Yes.
And I can tell you right now that that joke did not quack me up at all. And in fact, it's when I knew I was going to hate every part of this movie. And that was 13 minutes into yep. an hour and 50 yep. minute long movie.
The quack puns are, they got here.
Hated it all.
They had the breeders of the lost ark or whatever is the lost quack.
Oh, and blooming ducks, blooming credit card. Ducks, yes. And I mean,
so many the puns.
Puns.
So many puns.
And George Lucas is behind this.
Yes.
And he had just come off of Empire Strikes Back yep. in 81.
Jedi in 83.
And then just decided, Howard the Duck. Here's the other thing, and I couldn't remember. A better man than me would have remembered, but I couldn't remember if we were doing superhero movies, but this guy isn't a superhero.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any superpowers. He doesn't, like, he just shows up and, like, negotiates his way through some of the shit and quack foos his way through some other shit.
It goes back to the popularity of the comic in the 70s. I think a lot of these guys were smoking weed and hanging out and looking at Howard the Duck as this counterculture type of representative that was in these Marvel comics, and wanted to make a film that reflected that. Unfortunately, this isn't it. They try to be a little bit family friendly, but yet they have the scene in the massage parlor, which is way over the top that a lot of people won't take their kids to go see. There's no nudity in it, but we talked about the scene with Leah Thompson gets really insane. So it's not a kid's movie, but when it's not a kid's movie, they didn't go all in with the way Howard the Duck was with the adult humor. So they couldn't decide which one they wanted to be. And I think that's a problem with the film, is that they don't know what they are and what the identity is. Are they satire? or are they really trying to make a serious, you know, action adventure for the family? And that's why it comes off really, really disjointed. How about Lea Thompson's hair, though, there in this picture here?
She apparently wished that she had taken them up on the offer of having a wig, because this hairstyle apparently took like 2 hours a day.
Oh, really?
To put together.
I didn't know that. So, Tim Robbins.
So.
How did he end up in this film? I mean, he's very young here. My wife and I were talking about it. He had Bull Durham in his pocket, and somebody roped him into making Howard the Duck. So that's kind of, and he really, well, he cornballs it up in this film too.
Do you think that maybe he thought, okay, if I can just attach my name to George Lucas and I can become one of these guys, then maybe I'll be in Star Wars Episode 7 or 3 or whatever was coming next? Or maybe he just needed the money. I mean, maybe Bull Durham. Yeah. No. He hadn't done Bull Durham yet.
Oh, he hadn't. And this was 86. I thought Bull Durham had come out before then.
88 Bull Durham. He had only been in Saint Elsewhere, and he had had supporting roles in The Sure Thing and maybe Top Gun, which also was in 86. Yep. But then that's it. It was only after that that he starts becoming the Tim Robbins we know of Bull Durham, Jacob's Ladder, Shawshank Redemption, and so on, Mystic right. River. So I'm sure it was just a paycheck to him. Like, I'm a working actor. This is a big role for him. I'm working on it. I mean, because at the time, okay, so someone pitches it to you and they say, a beloved comic book, you know, character, kind of zany one-off character from the 70s. We've got George Lucas here, you know, putting this thing together. We've got, I think he asked Irv Kirshner to direct it, and he said no,
right,
somebody else. But like, oh, Lea Thompson will be in it. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting because we're doing this like animatronic live action duck. It's not going to be animated. It's not going to be CGI. We're going to do practical puppetry for this thing, or put a midget inside of a duck costume or whatever
we're
going to do.
Which is what they did. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure when it's produced by Lucasfilms, it's a Marvel Comics Group thing. I'm sure all those things check the boxes of, if you don't know any better, if you don't know what the end result is going to be, like, hell yeah, I'll sign on for that. Like, what, it's either this or do a Fritos commercial. Boy, I love Fritos in my chili pies. You know, and he's got to take a big old bite of chili with a Frito.
Didn't Jay Leno do those? That's what Jay Leno.
I don't know. Maybe.
But well, I love these Doritos. These Doritos are really good. That's what he did was, I just don't get away from my Doritos. That's all I can say. The Doritos are crazy.
He's a chump.
But yeah, so Tim Robbins, so he did need the paycheck. He's got a large role. He plays the doofus scientist, and it was, you know, it's funny. So this movie for me is, again, we've talked about this as far as like, it is more nostalgic for me because I do remember when it came out. I wasn't crazy about it in the 80s, but I didn't hate it. It was just there, and it wasn't, but I will say this, we didn't have a lot of Marvel movies in the 80s. They weren't making them. And it's kind of weird that the first one they really do, this big budget one, is The Duck. It just was kind of strange. So as a fan, it was like, all right, well, at least they've got a Marvel movie out there on the big screen. I didn't go see it in the movies. I went to the movies a lot. I did not go see this one there. But yeah, Lea Thompson, you know, Back to the Future, doing well. She says this movie killed her career. So she ended up going into TV.
She had said no to doing Some Kind of Wonderful.
Some Kind of Wonderful, yeah.
And then had to go beg her ass back. Yeah, and then Casual Sex, The Wizard of Loneliness.
Yeah, like nothing.
A bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, nobody wanted her after Howard the Duck, which is a shame. I think Tim Robbins didn't really have a career to ruin, so his trajectory was going up. Hers went down. Although she did end up doing Some Kind of Wonderful because it got delayed, and she met her future husband who directed Some Kind of Wonderful. So some things did work out. It's just that her career, because I think she just ended up on TV after that and did like that sitcom that she was in. I can't remember the name of it. But
who was her husband?
He was the director of Some Kind of Wonderful. Some dude.
Howard Deutsch.
Howard the Duck. Deutsch. Oh, she married Howard the Duck.
Yeah, she Howard wanted that corkscrew wiener. So I did not, obviously, every one of these movies, you will have to explain the like original context source material. But I could not for the life of me figure out what the tone of this movie was or what it was. I mean, I honestly couldn't really figure out what are we doing here? What problem are we solving by any of this?
No, it's you hit the nail on the head. It doesn't know what it wants to be. Is it a family film? Is it an adult humor? Is it counterculture? Is it sarcastic? Is it a parody? It's trying to be all these things simultaneously, and it doesn't succeed at any of them. The humor is just puns, you know, like we talked about. It's pun humor. So there's none of that sarcastic, tongue-in-cheek, metaphorical humor that made the comic good. So you get the situation where all it is him wanting to go back, and he's got to use the satellite to get back, but the satellite's become a gateway for demons. And then you enter in Jeffrey Jones, who plays the lead scientist. And we mentioned this at the beginning of the podcast. Poor Jeffrey here. I mean, he was the principal in Ferris Bueller. He was always known as like the heavy in the 80s. And then
fucking Amadeus, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's another one. I forgot about that.
Andy was in the world's shittiest fucking movie. He played the character Charles Dietz in Beetlejuice.
That's right. He is in Beetlejuice.
I'm glad he got put away for being a pedo.
He did. He did. Well, it was 2003 that they got him for child pornography. So yeah, I remembered that. Yeah. Oh God, this guy's problematic. When he came up on the screen. So he plays the villain, which is what he played in most everything he was in. And he, of course, slowly turns into a demon over the course of the film and becomes the guy that Howard the Duck has to fight, I guess. Howard, they kind of fight. They kind of have a big climactic battle at the end. So.
Right, but it was... I just kept asking myself, like, why? Why is any of this happening? Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Why is... this band that Leah Thompson is in, this... Everything felt so... I mean, yeah, okay. Of all the places on Earth, that Howard can be sucked through some physical time portal or whatever the hell it is, and he ends up in apparently the proto-German S&M bondage area of Cleveland.
Cleveland is Cleveland, so it didn't come off as too far from Cleveland for me.
And then they go into the proto-German S&M bondage club, leather daddies everywhere. That was my favorite part.
That was good, yeah.
And this band playing is basically playing pop, like Tiffany, Debbie Gibson music.
It was like Gem and the Holograms. It was very...
Also, Cherry Bomb is the name of the song...
Right.
That they put out in a movie that I hosted on Jarrett Goes to the Movies while he was on tour. This was called The Runaways. Runaways.
Yep. Yeah.
And I think it's based partly on the true story of one of the gals or some of the gals.
No, it's based on the actual band, The Runaways, which was Joan Jett and Aaliyah Ford.
And others. And then there was like one that was real young and one that was something.
Yeah. It's a decent movie.
Hey, man, you just unlocked. Like, I was really sheltered as a kid, as we all know. Yeah. I was going to say, I remember Howard the Duck from being a kid because I would see it at Blockbuster Video, you know, face, you know, it was face.
Yeah, the box, yeah.
And I would always think to myself, I want to get that movie.
Yeah.
But what was it, PG-13? And so I wasn't able
Something like that. Maybe
it was PG. But I don't know. We never got it. I don't know if I asked my parents and they were like, no,
you don't want that piece of shit in our house.
Even my Christian parents were like,
so yeah, I mean, it the thing of it is it's one of these movies, it's a throwaway movie from the 80s. The way I look at it is it's one of those that you could just rent from Blockbuster, put in the VCR, have some air pop popcorn or Jiffy Pop, whatever you prefer, and let the thing play out. It's one of those 80s films. It's not any different than any other bad VHS 80s film. And you can, it's got kind of a cult following about it of people that enjoy it for what it is. I think that it's very disjointed in like we've talked about in its tone, but I don't know. Looking back, it's hard for me to judge it because I don't look at it. I just look at it as a product of the 80s. I don't look at it as just a totally stupid film. I've seen worse. It's just an 80s film for me. Mike Florida has something to say. He says it's just like one cliche and dumb pub joke after another, but it did have something nostalgic or something for me, probably because my dad hated it, so we made him watch it. That's what Mike has said. So yeah, it's one of those. It's a you have that remembrance of it, but it's not a good film. The final scene, like that we've got up here on the screen, where he gets it, that is, it's almost like a take, like they're tongue in cheek doing Back to the Future with the guitar and the dancing, but it's just so horrible. The song is horrible. The Howard the Duck, it's horrible. It's just, there's nothing fun about it. But maybe that's the charm.
That last scene sucked. It was the weirdest, stupidest thing. I get that the 80s are filled with stupid movies. Beetlejuice, Can't Buy Me Love. All kinds of stupid fucking movies.
I like both of those movies.
You would.
And what about Just One of the Guys? That's a good one.
I don't know. I don't remember that one. Oh, but
okay. You probably hate it.
I just feel like in Morbius, I sat there and just thought to myself, is anything gonna happen? And in this one, I just thought everything that's happening is more retarded than the thing that happened before this.
Right.
And I don't know which of those is better. Waiting around for something to happen that's never gonna happen. Or going through something that is the most stupid, frustrating, dumb thing you ever went through in your whole life. And that's how I feel about Howard the Duck. It's not as bad as Beetlejuice. I think what makes Beetlejuice worse is that everybody pretends like they love it. And then like this cult developed where we all, everyone's too afraid to admit that they don't like it. The thing is that people are not afraid to admit they don't like Howard the Duck. So I don't feel as strongly about it because we're all basically on the same page.
Right.
We all saw it. We don't like it. It's stupid in its delivery, in its execution. It's stupid in its distilling down the best parts of the source material and turning it into this milquetoast, like vanilla manila paper version of what it could have been. All the social commentary's gone. All of everything, you know, that made it a good comic is making it a bad movie. But like, it was just not enjoyable. It was a struggle. It was a slog to just be like, okay, Eric, you've got to keep paying attention to this. It is your responsibility to show up tonight and continue to pay attention to this. It is you
will not feel good about yourself if you just give up on this and just be like, well, fuck it. You know,
I stopped tonight. I never finished it. That would be a first. It would have been a first.
Yeah. But I mean, I owe it to all of our legion of listeners.
Right.
To warn them about things like this. And I just want to go on record and say that Morbius versus Howard the Duck is probably the worst thing I've ever been a part of.
Yeah, I would agree that out of all of these in the bracket of eight, I did not like the last set either. This set is definitely not enjoyable. There was nothing. The thing about Howard the Duck, again, like I said, it's hard for me to be to hate on it because I think that the time it was made in, we got a lot of these shit. Mac and Me it was made during this time, and it's better than Mac and Me by a fraction, but it's still better than Mac and Me. And so it's hard for me to judge it as harshly as I do Morbius. Morbius, I think I dislike more from the standpoint of the way it carries itself, the way it tries to think like it's going to be this future franchise that we're all going to love and see. Howard the Duck was just, they just knew they were making this weird, stupid movie, and they just went all in on it. It was an attempt. It was a swing and a miss by all things considered, but it was a more valiant attempt than I look at it as Morbius.
Okay, but hold on, because I got a question about this.
Okay.
Inflation calendar. So Howard the Duck at $37 million.
Yeah, cost to make.
$1 million to make in 1986 has the same buying power as it didn't like that. I'm doing this backwards, aren't I?
I have no idea.
Hold on.
I don't know what you're doing.
No, I'm trying to figure out because we can say like the budget for Morbius was 100 and.
Yeah.
What was it? What did we say it was? 85
million? 85 million. It made 170 worldwide. Yeah.
But I guarantee you $35 million in 86
is without a doubt
the same as $85 million.
I think Morbius was more successful, but only because of at that time. Then Marvel, Howard the Duck came out. Nobody was going to see Marvel movies. They weren't a thing. It was just this. Everybody saw Howard the Duck, and it was kind of like,
Do you remember how this was marketed at all?
Yeah, it was just the standard commercials and trailers, and it just looked weird. But the thing was, is that I think parents were warned off about it from the content, so you didn't get families going to see it. It wasn't a family film, and it wasn't an adult humor film like a Heavy Metal or something like that. So because it stayed in the middle, it just totally tanked. Whereas Morbius, I think people expected, hey, it's in the Sony pictures. It's in the Spider-Man universe. They even tried to use Spider-Man in the trailer, and he wasn't in the movie. They had like a poster with Spider-Man on it to kind of tease that maybe there was going to be a Spider-Man in it, but it wasn't. So it just was a failure of a film from that standpoint. It ruined the reputation of Sony Pictures. They won't make any more movies other than Spider-Man now because of this garbage. Well, they tried. They made Madam Web and another Venom and Kraven, but now they're done. So it is.
They learned their lesson the fifth time.
The fifth time.
But I mean, we keep kind of like wholesale, and I would propose,
yes,
lazily. Grouping Madam Web in with all of the rest of these films.
Right.
And I'm not sure that that's quite accurate.
Madam Web is a piece of shit. It's a horrible film.
I've got 74 reasons that I'm going to go through right now.
I don't know if this is a bit or if you truly think Madam Web is a good film. I think you're just having me on. But it... It's not a good film. It's
better than both of the films we watched this week, and it's better than the film that we watched last week.
I would say
Madam Web is the best movie we've watched. We have watched four movies. Madam Web is the best one we watched. Not that it's a good movie.
No,
it's the best of these four.
It's marginally better than Morbius, for sure.
No, no, not marginally. Not marginally, and I'm not going to allow you to discount it that way.
It's a horrible film. It doesn't have any great action sequences at all in it until the end.
Bull fucking shit.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's just horrible, except for a dream sequence, which is non-existent.
You know what? What we should have done is put these movies in the middle and then gone this way for the worst and this way for the best. And I guarantee you, at the end of all this, Madam Web comes out on top.
Would have been the best of the worst. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's decide on this one, though. These are two, you know, bad Marvel films. Howard the Duck and Morbius. Which one is the worst of the two, in your opinion? Do you want to eat the turd sandwich or the bag of vomit? Which one would you prefer?
It's more like turd sandwich or like three-day-old Indian food wrapped in a dirty diaper that someone then ate and shit that out. And now I got to eat that. Because, Howard the Duck made no sense. Morbius felt like it was intentionally trying to piss me off. Like that they could know enough about me to know like this film is going to make him mad.
Yeah.
I mean, all I can say is this, and this is the only way I'm going to get to a conclusion on this, is that if I had a friend, you know, or like, you know,
if you had a friend,
if I had a friend or I had a date and I was like, you know, come over, I went to the video store and there were only two videos on the shelves. And I picked one of these for us to watch together. Howard the Duck would be the one that I would choose, because at least there's a level of absurdity that starts to get you going. Am I being like gaslit into thinking this is supposed to be funny?
I think it's the scene where they try to literally chop him into pieces in the restaurant to make a duck dinner. When I saw that scene, I'm like, what is going on here? They're not even taking his clothes off. They're just going to take a cleaver.
And he's speaking to you in your language.
You're going to just chop up the talking duck because you're a little pissed at him because he said some bad things. Yeah, but for those reasons, I don't know if I would say I would watch Howard the Duck again, but I'm more likely to watch it again than I am Morbius.
That's okay. I mean, that's where I'm at. So I guess the winner loser of this, I'm voting for Morbius.
Okay. I think that we can decide on that. While Howard the Duck is a terrible film, it's at least got a value that you can show some people. Hey, look at this piece of shit. Morbius, if you put Morbius on with a group of people, if you put Howard the Duck on with a group of people, they're going to go, what the hell is this? And watch it for a few minutes and get maybe a couple of laughs at how stupid it is. You put Morbius on in a group of people and they're going to want to commit suicide because
they would just lose interest. They would be like, what is this?
Yeah,
why?
Exactly.
What are we doing here?
Exactly.
You know, at least you could sell Howard the Duck as like, hey, everybody come over to my place. We're going to watch a really weird, awful movie.
We're going to get stoned and watch it.
It'll be fun.
We're going to get stoned and watch it, and I think that would make the appeal even better. So, we'll say that. The loser this week and moving on in the worst Marvel film ever is the classic, the only movie to ever bomb twice in the same year, and that is Morbius. It's Morbin time, is what the kids said the worst Marvel film of this week between the two. So congrats to Morbin Morbius and
Larry Morbius and his merry band of vampiric problematic people.
Yes.
We're halfway through this.
Yes.
This feels worse than the last.
Really? Those were some bad movies. I think some of these are just boring is what the problem is. And they don't get any better because in a couple of weeks, we have the first round is going to continue with Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance. You wanted Nick Cage? You got Nick Cage. Against Jennifer Garner in Elektra. If you've seen the new Deadpool versus Wolverine movie that came out, Jennifer Garner reprises her role as Elektra in that film because Ryan Reynolds was trying to close the loop on all these bad non-MCU Marvel movies. And so if you haven't seen it, it's got Blade in it. Channing Tatum plays Gambit, which was supposed to be made into a Fox superhero film. It never made it off the ground. So, and I think this is
Gandalf is what you're trying to
do. Okay, it was Gambit. Gandalf is not in Deadpool vs. Wolverine. But Elektra is Jennifer Garner. But I will say this. I remember watching Elektra in the Ben Affleck Daredevil. So she started in that movie as the love interest. And they decided, oh, people really like this character. Let's give her her own spinoff movie. And it is the dullest dishwater dirt rag piece of garbage. It is a non-movie is what it is. So you're going to love it.
That's what you said about Madam Web, and we're wrong. So we'll just see how you do with this one.
I'll never understand your love for Madam Web. But that's going to be it for us for tonight. We'll be back in 2 weeks for Elektra versus Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance in our worst Marvel movie category. Thanks for joining us again. If you want to follow us, you can go to Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts. Look for Box Office Battles with Greg and Erica. Please subscribe so you can listen to the podcast wherever you're at on any platform. You can almost always email us at boxofficebattles@gmail.com and always follow us on YouTube at Box Office Battle Podcast. With that, turn it over to Eric for his final words of the night.
We do appreciate all of your support and all of your listening. Until the next time that we all get together, please remember to be excellent to each other and to tell a friend to watch Madam Web.
We'll see you in a couple weeks for Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance versus Elektra here on Box Office Battles. Until then, we're out of here.